Welcome back. You're listening to Chat with Women, and I'm Pam.
And I'm Rochelle.
And we have Dr. Leah McNeil here this morning, and we're going to be talking about breast, colon, and lung cancer in women. And we want to let our audience know that we're very, very willing to have you call in today if you have a question as we're going through this topic, because this is really a heavy topic and yet very, very important. And we're only picking these three today because there's way too many.
Right.
So the numbers are 425-373-5527 or 888-298-5569. And Benny would be glad to pick up the phone. So let's talk about, Dr. Leah, which cancer would you like to talk about first? Which of those three?
I think breast cancer would be a good thing. That's the one that we as women relate to more than the other two. And we are diagnosed with breast cancer far more than any other types of cancer, but we die from it far less than the colon and lung cancer.
Really?
Especially lung. That one's much more deadly.
Why is that?
For us. It's diagnosed a lot later. Breast cancer, we do screens.
Oh, you know, so we're diagnosed with breast cancer, so we find it, and then we can treat it.
Well, I would imagine like lung and colon are probably harder to find, aren't they?
You don't get,
Until
colon cancer
on.
We can tend to find sooner because we do more screenings with that. But most people don't get a chest x-ray on a regular basis.
That's true. They
don't get their lungs really assessed. And so it's not usually found until it's in its later stages, and then it's harder to treat.
So should we have a chest x-ray? Sooner or annually?
I don't know. There's some controversy about that as well. It's like when we get mammograms and ultrasounds, sometimes for our breasts, sometimes they can see things on the ultrasound part.
Right.
But I can't really say that's a good idea to get a chest x-ray every year because you're exposing yourself to a lot of extra radiation that you probably don't need.
True.
But if there's history or risk there with smoking or in the family or a chronic cough or something that's just not going away, then that should be looked at.
And that's in lung cancer, the chronic
cough. That's in
cough,
lung cancer, yeah.
What else? What other symptoms?
Fatigue, chronic bronchitis is not uncommon. You've been a smoker for a long time. Mm-hmm. You're all of a sudden losing a lot of weight. That's more, I mean, cancer, a lot of people that have cancer that hasn't been detected, they'd lose a lot of weight.
Really?
At some point, because it's taking up so much energy.
Guess I don't have that problem.
Thank goodness.
No, this is very interesting.
It is.
But
it's good to know.
One of the things I want to back up a little bit is we were going to talk about today risk factors and supplements.
Yes.
So for each one of these cancers, because that's the whole thing is, I think today we're finally reaching and believing that we can heal or prevent these cancers by what we eat and our supplements. And so naturopathic doctors now are being listened to, where I don't think 10 years ago anybody believed you even had a voice. And, you know, I have to say that we've believed in it a long time ago. So let's talk about risk factors of breast cancer.
So risk factors for breast cancer we found out much more about in the last 10 years than we used to. We always used to think genetics was a big factor. If your mom had it or your aunt had it or a cousin, then you have a likelihood of getting it. But that's not so much true anymore.
Really?
There's a lot of women being diagnosed that have no family history. And it's looking more at the hormone side, which has a factor, but they're even finding now that the birth control pills and those kind of things aren't as big of a deal as we originally thought about them as.
Really?
It's how your body's really handling the hormones that's the biggest thing. We have three estrogens in our body. And one of those estrogens tends to cause more of a problem with growing the breast cancer tumor than the other two. So you have to look at a woman's hormone ratios and what they're doing. That could be a factor. Of course, obesity is a factor. Alcohol, smoking, high-fat diet has been found to be a huge factor in the risk of breast cancer.
For breast cancer?
Yes.
High fat, really?
Yes, yeah. Because the fat, when it aromatizes, as a fancy word, it can actually cause more inflammation, and the breasts are sensitive to certain types of hormones like that. The aromatase enzyme, for example, is an enzyme that's in all of our bodies, and it can increase the proliferation of cancer cells. And so there are certain things that decrease that enzyme that we can take, but for some women they have more. And so that they're going to make, if they have a little bit of cancer, they're going to make a whole bunch more. So it's not so much saying there are certain risk factors, but you cannot say genetics is the only thing anymore. That is something for sure.
But that's good that we all know that now too. Yeah. So well, we don't rely on that.
I was going to say, because I think what happens is you go, well, my mother didn't
have it.
I'm not going to have it.
I'm probably fine.
That's and right. I know myself personally. I have met women that had no history of it and then had breast cancer at 30.
Right.
You know, and you would have, there's no way you would have even been checking at 30. Mm-hmm. So do you, if I come to you, let's say Dr. Lee, and I'm, 35 years old and I'm not getting mammograms yet because they say to wait till they're 40. Do you recommend anything at that point to start me on a regimen so that I don't end up with breast cancer? What do you do for me?
So if you're 35 and you might be starting to show some hormone changes in your cycle, possibly that can happen as early as that. And I would want to do a hormone panel to look at those three estrogens I mentioned.
Oh, you would then? Okay.
I would. And most women around 35 usually are still having a regular cycle, but they can have some subtle changes going on that you don't feel or see.
Sure. Right.
So looking at those three estrogens is important because one of them, called estrone, is the one that will cause the problems. And if a woman who is 35 has a really high level compared to her estradiol, which is the most dominant one and the best one out there, then that's a problem. And there are herbs, there are supplements that can help to switch that or bind on to that estrone. And it's actually, I should clarify that, it's the estrone when it breaks down. It breaks down into a 2 or a 16 estrone. And the 16 is bad, the 2 is good. And so you need to look at that ratio. And there are ways to switch that in women early on so that they're not exposed to that for years and years and years as they're going through perimenopause. And it decreases PMS because that estrone is also the one that will cause the breast tenderness and the PMS and the irritability and before our cycle. And so you give them these supplements to shift that ratio, and it actually, they feel better.
So what are the supplements?
One of them is called diendomethane. Uh-huh. What the world is that? It's also called DIM. And it's from cruciferous sprouts like broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts. And it's an enzyme that they've gotten from that vegetable. And what it does is it binds on to the 16 estrone. It's very specific, but it binds onto the estrogen in the liver and in the gut so it doesn't absorb into the bloodstream. And it does have a specific role in that. It also helps the detoxification enzymes in the liver to process the estrogens better. So it has a lot of benefits. And it's a supplement that I usually give to women in a capsule form.
Uh-huh.
Yes, you can eat more vegetables. I always recommend that. But you have to eat a lot to have an effect.
How many Brussels sprouts do you have
right?
to eat?
That's always a problem with that.
Exactly.
How many you're supposed to eat to really make a difference.
Exactly.
I mean, eating it does help. But to take it for a specific thing, to get the diendomethane, it's like you have to have, a couple heads of broccoli every hour. It's too much. But I usually give it to women in a supplement form, and I have them take it throughout the month. Sometimes I'll have them increase it before their period because that's when their symptoms might be worse. There's another one called calcium deglucurate, which is does the same thing as DIM, and it binds onto the estrogen kind of at a little bit different pathway. Sometimes I'll give women both.
Right.
But most of the time, women in their 30s, and I'm glad you brought this up, Pam, don't think about their hormone levels and what's going on.
You're invincible at 30.
Well, I'm hoping, though, that our show is now warning women that you do want to think about it.
Sure.
And when we already know how many years ago we had somebody that worked with us who got breast cancer in her late 20s and then ended up passing away.
So it's more deadly than.
We've seen it. So it's like, if you're having, why not get yourself tested?
Yeah. Well, it's so simple to just go to you and have you do this panel. I mean, it's
at any
just
age.
So simple.
It's just, I mean, it's a hormone panel. It's a blood draw. You also check vitamin D because vitamin D protects against breast cancer.
It does.
And a lot of cancers, but it will protect against breast cancer.
It does.
It decreases inflammation. And so therefore, anytime you decrease inflammation anywhere in the body, you're decreasing risk for cancer. But the diendomethane, the calcium deglucarate, eating more vegetables, of course, exercise is always beneficial for anything. But breast cancer in general, I really encourage women, especially when they're coming into me early for PAPs and breast exams, to get used to their breasts. Be comfortable doing an exam on yourself, feeling the breast detection. Early detection is usually done by the woman herself, not the mammogram, not the ultrasound. It's the, gosh, I feel this lump that's normally not there. And I had a 17-year-old recently come in, and I did some exams on her, and she just was not comfortable with her body at all. She was like going, ew, and ew. And I just thought, I talked to her about getting more comfortable, because it's very important as she gets older that she feels okay touching her own breasts and doing an exam in the shower or on the bed, because that's something that we need to be comfortable with as women all throughout our lives.
And being taught how to do it properly is something important also, Dr. Leah, which, you know, a lot of us miss that. So,
oh, absolutely. Our generation, the baby boomers, are you kidding me? Our parents didn't tell us about any of that because they weren't doing it. They weren't.
Of course not.
They weren't. I don't even think they had mammograms during my my mother's never had a mammogram.
No, I don't think they had them either.
Yeah, I don't. So, you know, they didn't. We weren't taught it. And then, you know, so then now we would have, I'm sure, if we'd had daughters. But, boy, now you sure better.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's getting more and more prevalent.
Yes.
And you hear 1 in 8 women or 1 in 7 women.
Right.
The thing about that statistic that is very confusing, and I was at a conference recently and they talked about this, is 1 in 8 is over your lifetime. It's not like at where you're at right now.
Well, yeah, because we sit and we go 1 of 8. Well, let's see, there's 3 of us women. I mean, you know, I think of it that way, like there's 8 women in a room. One of us is going to get it. That's how I look at it.
And that's not necessarily true. It's like they based that ratio on a lifespan of 120 years.
Oh. 120.
Where did they come up with that?
Oh.
A girl who's 3 does not have a 1 in 8 chance. A woman who's in her 60s does not have a 1 in 8 chance. The girl who's 3 might have a 1 in 9 million chance.
Huh,
the girl who's
really?
In her 60s has maybe a 1 in 4. Because it's over the lifetime that it's 1 in 8.
Oh, as we get older, we have more of a chance.
You have much more of a chance.
Okay.
In postmenopause. To
all right.
It.
It's Wednesday and it's Dr. Leah's day, and we are talking about cancer in women, and it's a very important topic. We just learned some things. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to talk about more cancers. So let's get into it. But we're going to take a break, so we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Leah. You're listening to Chat with Women, and it's Wednesday,
got her own show,
and it's Dr. Leah Day, and we are talking about a very important topic. It's cancer in women, and like Pam said earlier, if you have a question that you need to have asked to Dr. Leah, don't hesitate to give us a call. You don't want to use your name, that's fine. Benny will screen the call. But our numbers are 425-373-5527 or in Western Washington, 1-888-298-5569. So, Dr. Leah, we chatted about breast cancer, but we also mentioned lung cancer and colon cancer,
yes,
which is becoming prevalent now. And how is a woman's cancer in those arenas different than a man's?
Well, a lot of times they're diagnosed a little later in life. Well, especially lung cancer. That's one that I mentioned earlier, that men tend to be smokers more, although it's kind of caught up. Women have been smoking just as much as men. And so lung cancer is looked at more, honestly, in men than it is in women. But lung cancer rates are equally 50% men, 50% women.
Really?
And there is a much higher death rate from lung cancer, like I mentioned. Colon cancer has more to do with constipation, not enough fiber, genetics, growth of polyps. Our hormones can make things change there as well, especially as we're going through menopause. A lot more things can change with our colon. Our hormones can make us more constipated sometimes because our thyroid
that
drops.
That comes from hormones?
Well, when our estrogen drops, sometimes it can affect the...
Go ahead. Sometimes Pam's leaving the room now.
She's coughing. Sometimes it can affect our thyroid, and when our estrogen drops, and therefore that can make us more constipated.
And
men, I don't think, have as big of an issue there. I can't speak for all men,
sure,
of course, but I tend to see a lot more women in my practice. But men don't have the thyroid changes that women do as
okay.
they're going through hormone changes. And so I tend to see that. And then I guess we all get colon cancer checks
mm-hmm.
or colonoscopies done at
true.
About the same rate.
And how soon should we be doing that? What is there a certain age?
50 is uh-huh. the typical age, unless there is risk in the family. I would have it done earlier. If there is a lot of colon cancer in their family, I would start at 40.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard some doctors say that, oh, gosh, you know, start at 40, get checked early, because lots of colon cancer in the family might mean a genetic shift. And there are certain genes, there's actually several genes that mark for colon cancer. And also, some of these genes cause other types of cancer in the body. So if there's lots of cancer in your family, not just colon. But,
we've got coughing going on in this studio. Oh, my. Where's that Lysol? Yeah.
If you've got lots of cancer in your family, there might be a genetic marker that's mm-hmm. actually causing these. And so that's something that can be checked as well.
So what are the symptoms?
Colon cancer symptoms usually, not always, can start out as blood in the stool.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't usually recognize it as blood because it's a very dark stool,
mm-hmm.
black even.
Right.
That's usually blood from higher up. It's
okay.
come down and it's been digested. Although bright red blood mm-hmm. is usually from the rectum or just inside the sigmoid colon, which is the lower half of the colon. And that could be from a polyp. Or it
right.
could be from a hemorrhoid, which is very common.
Right.
But chronic hemorrhoids mean you have lots of inflammation and issues in that area as well. So blood...
That's good to know. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Chronic hemorrhoids are varicose veins.
Yes, that
so
I knew.
People who have varicose veins in their legs probably have some hemorrhoids.
Right.
That's not uncommon.
Right.
It could be a chronic constipation or diarrhea.
Diarrhea.
Might be an irritable bowel issue
mm-hmm.
or some... bowel issues, but you know, I had a friend who got diagnosed with colon cancer in her 30s,
mm.
and she had no symptoms at all. She had some pressure,
uh-huh.
no symptoms that were typical, I should say.
Right.
She had some pressure in her left side. Actually, it was in her right side. It was in her right side, and it was just unusual. And they thought it was ovarian, and she just didn't think about it. And finally, had an ultrasound, and they saw a mass.
Oh, for heaven's sakes!
And right-sided colon cancer has a different effect than left-sided, because left-sided is where the colon is dropping down into the rectum.
Yes.
And that's more common to have colon cancer on that side than on the right side. So for her, it was a genetic marker.
Wow.
And that set it off for her.
So are there any supplements or foods that we should take to help us with that?
Curcumin and turmeric, they're the same.
Mm-hmm.
Work wonders. It's actually considered an anti-cancer herb. It's a great anti-inflammatory. And it's, gosh, you know, it's in curry, you can just buy turmeric by itself. But turmeric or curcumin can be used for lots of different types of cancer to decrease risk. Ginger, garlic.
Really?
Anything that, well, garlic, because of the immune effect that it has. It's antiviral, antibacterial, and it has wonderful effects on the immune system. But it's been shown to block some of the enzymes that will cause the cancer to kind of go down the pathway or cause it to spread.
That's very interesting.
Garlic, Leah. Turmeric,
now,
ginger.
Is that only in pill form or in spice form? Like turmeric is, you know, you use that in your curries or
yeah.
your seasonings.
I think eating more garlic would be a great
you
way
do.
To do it. If people really don't want to eat a lot of extra garlic.
I was going to say, but you can't get next to people if you do that.
Well,
but
actually, I take a organic garlic pill every
uh-huh.
morning. It's not the type that you buy in the store. It's type that's sold in naturopaths, but it's an organic garlic, and it's very strong.
Mm-hmm.
The first week I started taking it, my husband thought I smelled like an Italian restaurant. But it's now, I don't think I smell like garlic all the time.
Not at all.
Your body gets used to it. And that's true when eating garlic, too. It's like your body can get used to it. It's released. You release garlic from your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we sometimes get rid of things through our kidneys or through our liver. This is actually, we release it from our lungs. So that's why you smell like it so long.
Interesting. Very interesting.
So garlic, also, let's see, garlic, turmeric, ginger, actually melatonin. Melatonin
really?
Is we
and
always
that
think
isn't
of,
that the sleep?
It is for sleep.
Yeah.
It does help you sleep, but it's also an aromatase inhibitor. I mentioned that enzyme earlier, aromatase. Aromatase increases cancer cell proliferation. It increases the growth of cancer cells. If you block that enzyme, then you don't get the increased cancer cell. So melatonin is an aromatase inhibitor. And I know many cancer treatment centers that give high-dose melatonin to people who have cancer. So if you take low-dose melatonin, like 1 to 3 milligrams, that can actually decrease cancer risk. Some people can't take it because it gives them crazy dreams or they wake up tired in the morning. But if you can tolerate it, by all means, you know, 1 milligram a night is not going to hurt anybody.
And it also will help you sleep
better. It helps
better.
With sleep, which is also good.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, it sounds like protecting against one cancer helps you protect against the other cancers.
Exactly.
Which is very interesting.
Exactly. I mean, you can find an herb that might be specific for one type of cancer, but it's actually going to affect many types. You know, it will. I mean, if you decrease inflammation in the body, for example.
And that's a big key, isn't it, Dr.
Leah? It's huge. Mm-hmm. Inflammation is a huge factor mm-hmm. in cancer, in heart disease, in cholesterol buildup, in a lot of stuff. If you decrease inflammation in the body, you keep your body healthy.
I have a question.
Wait a minute. You're off.
Your mic's off.
Your mic's off because of
that. Oh, you know, coughing and choking. You told us, the reason we want to talk about this today is you told us that you were going to this seminar. So did you learn something new about all these cancers, Dr. Leah, that, you know, we aren't all sort of aware of by when you went to the seminar?
There was a lot of information, so much so I was thinking, what can I talk about? Because there's a lot. And a lot of it was statistics, like the 1 in 8 thing I told you.
Right.
It's not just right now. It's over your whole lifetime that there's a 1 in 8 chance of developing cancer. There's a lot of those types of stats that were out there that I don't know if everyone will remember those kind of things. But the big things were inflammation, sleep actually was talked about. People that have insomnia and don't sleep well have a higher risk because they're increasing their inflammation and their weight.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I mentioned that on the break. It's like when we don't sleep as much, you actually
go through that because we did mention that at break, and that was very interesting.
Yeah.
So if you don't sleep, what happens?
Well, there's a lot of things that happen. One of the things that happens though is there's a hormone that suppresses our appetite, and it's called leptin. Leptin actually drops when you don't sleep well, and so you eat more. Mm-hmm. So the hormone that makes us eat more, that makes us hungry, is called ghrelin, and it goes up when you don't sleep. And so here you have the suppression of leptin and the increase of this other one that makes you hungry. And people that don't sleep well will be eating and eating and eating and never feel full. So obesity is a risk factor for cancer. And if you don't sleep well, number one, you get that hormones that are off, but you also don't get growth hormone that goes up. Growth hormone is a very important hormone in repairing what's going on in our body. It usually goes up between 1 and 3 in the morning. 1 and 4, you know, somewhere in there. And if you're awake during that time, then you don't get growth hormone going
like me.
Up. You don't get that repair happening in your body of some injury that happened that day, or just in general repair of the cellular structure of your body. So you don't get that, and you're more achy. You can be more tired, of course, but your body's more achy because of it.
You know, I keep thinking about all the people that are that have sleep apnea.
Oh,
and
right.
They're usually heavier, and they're on machines, and so they're not sleeping well because, you know, it's all very dysfunctional. This is very interesting.
The hormones, you know, the issues with us and menopause, most women aren't sleeping well either.
Oh, that's a big factor.
I mean, who sleeps? I mean, really, truly, we always joke, if we can get 4 straight hours before we wake up, and then you can go back to sleep. But
If you can go back to sleep.
So there's a whole lot of us out there that are not sleeping 7 straight hours. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember how many years ago I ever slept 7 straight hours. I can't remember.
No, I can't either. Well, you're listening to Chat with Women, and it is Wednesday, and it is our Dr. Leah Day. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to finish up this topic. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of doctors that don't listen to you? Do you barely get enough time to tell your doctor what's going on with you? Would you like to spend more time with your doctor so they can really answer your questions? One such doctor that can do this for you is Dr. Leah McNeil in Bellevue. She's a naturopathic doctor and practices family medicine. She does full physicals, blood work, uses herbs, vitamins, and pharmacy, if needed, to help you get better. She also does nutrition analysis and lifestyle counseling. You can reach her at 425-452-9366 or on her website at naturalmedicineforhealth.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Chat with Women, and I'm Rochelle.
And I'm Pam.
And it's Wednesday. It's our Dr. Leah Day, and we are chatting about cancer in women and different types of cancer that affect us, as in breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer. And as Pam mentioned at break, we kind of felt we sort of skipped over lung cancer. And
well, what I was saying is, you know, there's so many people we're hearing about that get lung cancer when they never smoked, ever.
Yes. Yeah.
So what is that? Where are we getting?
Look at where we live. A great majority of the population lives in a big city. Mm-hmm. You know, and
so
drives
we're breathing
cars.
That.
It's the environment.
Really?
And it's the secondhand smoke, possibly, but maybe people aren't even around that. And it's a lot of its environment. It just what we're breathing in. I mean, our lungs, our sinuses filter all of our air.
Right.
And it's inflammation. It could be genetic. I mean, there's other things possibly, but
inflammation's a big key, isn't it?
Big factor.
Well, and how do you keep that? There's so many ways. I guess you were talking about earlier to keep the inflammation at bay by, you know, garlic and all of these. One of the things I think I heard you mention when I came rolling back in after my coughing fit was we didn't mention green tea as a great supplement for all these cancers, and we know it. You know, it's so funny how we hear it all the time now. But how much green tea do we have to drink, Dr. Leah?
Well, and it's the catechins that are in the green tea. And it's green tea, I don't know, it's not like 3 or 4 cups a day, because some people can't have caffeine.
Right.
You know, so there is, I guess, decaffeinated green tea.
Right.
Does it do the same?
I think it does, because it's not the caffeine that's the effect.
Okay.
And I'm not honestly sure if the decaffeination process would affect the other flavonoids that are in it. There's flavonoids in green tea.
Mm-hmm.
There's flavonoids in a lot of things, like in berries and other foods. But one of those flavonoids, called catechins, are specific, have some anti-cancer effects and actually block some of the enzymes that will cause the cancer to spread to other parts of your body. So metastasis is a big factor in a lot of these kind of cancers. And so stopping it from spreading is important. So this substance from green tea. Also, catechin suppresses appetite a little bit. So for some, and
green
it helps
tea,
burn
really?
Fat.
I haven't
noticed
that.
Let's go get a box.
Well, we went and got white tea because we heard that was supposed to be.
And there's less caffeine in white tea, actually.
Right. We'd heard that was supposed to be good.
And what about milk thistle?
Milk thistle. What is that?
Is that?
I mean, how do you get it?
Well, most of the time it's in an herb form.
Okay.
In a capsule.
Right.
And it's for the liver. It protects the liver from being damaged.
Mm-hmm.
It has a little bit of a detox effect, but I think of it more as a protectant, like you put a bubble around the liver. You know, you're protecting it. So if it's exposed to toxins, then it won't be as damaged. It won't have the harm done to it.
Well, this is a huge topic, and I think part of what you're saying also, Dr. Leah, which I heard on the radio this morning too, is women who take an aspirin are really protecting themselves, and it sounds like it's because of this inflammation.
I think the anti-inflammatory effect. I mean, aspirin is probably one of the oldest medicines we have. It's made from white willow bark, and it's just a real basic salicylic acid. That's what it is. And it's nothing harmful in it, I don't think. And inflammation, And lung cancer, to go back to that, is something that's not detected early, like I mentioned.
Right.
So most of the time it does spread. A lot of times it has started to spread by the time that
it is detected.
They detected it, and so it's gone somewhere else. It's not always. I've known women that had a lobe taken out or something, but it's just so detrimental. It's an important part of our body, like anything. Our breasts can be taken off and we can live.
Right.
But we can't live without our lungs. And when you compromise the lungs by taking out a lobe, it just starts to affect how your body handles oxygen and everything. And lung cancer is so much more deadly. Like if there's 200,000 women that are diagnosed with breast cancer, maybe 30,000 will die of it. If there's 80,000 women diagnosed each year with lung cancer, 35 to 40,000 die.
Wow.
That's a lot more. It sounds like the same number, but when a lot less are diagnosed, it's a much higher percentage.
Well, it sounds to me like one of the things that I heard you say is that if you have a persistent cough, if you are tired,
yes,
you know, all these
losing
things.
Weight.
Actually, I had a persistent cough. I tend to get coughs that, you know, everybody has an area.
Yeah.
So I did have that checked out, and this was many years ago. It was like this ongoing sort of, you know, ongoing, and it's more allergy related.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I did get a lung X-ray because that was a concern.
And X-rays, what I found out, one of the things I found out in this conference I was at was that X-rays don't always show it either.
Well, that's true.
So if you're really suspecting it, they can look at X-ray for pneumonia, you know,
true,
and those kind of things.
Right.
But an MRI is really one of the best things to do, although I wouldn't necessarily recommend you get an MRI all the time. But if there is a high suspicion of it and doctors are worried about that, then an MRI would be the way to go. And actually, MRIs are also a way to go for breast cancer.
True.
Certain types of breast cancer, it's much better to do an MRI of the breast.
Right.
And, you know,
it's a little
so,
less invasive also. You have to go into the vise.
Yeah, that's true. You hang out, though, when you're doing
Yeah, well, I'd rather hang than crunch.
But cancer in general, decrease inflammation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Don't drink so much alcohol.
Sleep.
Decrease your fat. Sleep better.
Exercise.
Move. Yeah. Get out and move your body.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Spiritual, the emotional side of all this is very, very important too. You can do all those things and feel emotionally horrible. But it's like if you can get that part of your life straightened out, that's a huge factor.
I think it's also important to go to you personally and have a baseline and have that baseline taken that you do, the hormones,
yeah,
all that. I think it's very important to take that. And really, cancer can be detected from a blood test.
Well, I have to tell you, we've talked about vitamin D over and over and over, mm-hmm, and over again.
Oh, yeah.
But
that's a big one.
The key here is that a lot of people, I mean, I talk to women all the time, and they go, oh, okay, I heard it. So they go down to the health food store, and they get 1,000 milligrams, and they're taking it, and it isn't even always D3.
Right.
And so I want to emphasize that you really want to have it checked. You don't really know. I know personally I was like at 35. You want to be 50 to 70 is your number or whatever. And after like a whole year on 5,000, I hadn't moved up that much.
It's a lot. And when, yeah, people will say, oh, yeah, I'm taking 1,000 to 2,000, I'm like, well, that's probably not enough. And they look at,
yeah,
me like, what?
I know.
And the reference range has changed now. 33 to 100 has been the reference range for a long time.
Okay.
50 to 150 is the new reference range.
They want it higher.
150, yeah, is the upper,
wow,
range. So seeing somebody at 70 is like, well, geez, that's not even probably 80 or 90 or 100. You know, it's probably going to be better.
That's very interesting.
So, and I would imagine you want to have that checked often,
absolutely,
too, because you could be on
different
high
seasons.
Dosage. You have to be watching,
well,
it. Yeah,
summer,
different
season. Look at the season today. It's gloomy and foggy, and,
yeah,
you know, you're really not getting any
it's
vitamin D.
It's the latitude
D
that we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a,
yeah,
test.
We're not going to get
if
any.
If you have a sunny day in, mm-hmm, the winter around here, and it's noon, go outside and stand in the sun and look how long your shadow is. If your, oh, shadow is longer than you are tall, you're not getting any vitamin D. None.
That's a good test.
That's very interesting.
And you can get the redness from standing in the sun because that's the UVA rays.
Right.
But the UVB rays are the vitamin D rays. And at the angle that we're at, when the sun's rays come through the atmosphere, they actually degrade the UVB rays. So you don't get any vitamin D.
I remember you telling us, don't even think in Seattle you're going,
right,
to get any in the winter.
Right.
So just don't even count, mm-hmm, on it. And so get your vitamin D checked. So go to Dr. Leah and get all your levels,
absolutely,
like Rochelle said, checked.
Get everything checked from Dr. Leah. She's marvelous, and you,
oh,
might meet Tanner if you go in. So we want to let our listeners know that Dr. Leah's phone number is 425-452-9366. And your website, Dr. Leah,
is naturalmedicineforhealth.com.
Or go to Chat with Women, and Dr. Leah's picture is right there. So thank you for joining us today. I think
thank
it
you.
Was a very good show as far as clarification goes.
A really good show.
A really good show. A really rocking good show.
And I want to let everyone know, if they go to chatwithwomen.com and click on Dr. Leah's picture, all of her tips for the last couple of years are there. And she's given us fabulous tips, so you don't want to miss out.
No, absolutely. In fact, Dr. Lee is the one that has brought vitamin D to the country to say, oh, yes, absolutely. Because of Dr. Leah, it was exposed, and now everybody realizes that you should be taking vitamin D. So this was a very good show. I think because of cancer and inflammation, that's a big aha, very big. So thank you, Dr. Leah.
Thank you.